Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips and the PC. It is Saturday, the third day of July, Anno Domini 2021. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edrick.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour as we hurtle headlong into the second half of 2021. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
That's right. The year is half over with, and the days are already getting longer.
Shorter.
They are, you know, shorter as far as daylight and longer night hours.
And it's going to be, here we are. My request couldn't be processed. It always says that. Oh, well.
Maybe you didn't ask correctly.
I apparently wasn't polite enough. So,
been meaning to talk to you about that.
Man, I'll tell you what, folks. I hope you're sitting down. Microsoft has assigned a CVE number to the Print Spooler Remote Code Execution Vulnerability, known as Print Nightmare, and confirmed that the offending code is lurking in all versions of Windows. That is a print nightmare. They said it was still investigating whether the vulnerability was exploitable in every version, but domain controllers are indeed affected. Microsoft also confirmed that this nasty vulnerability is distinct from the print vulnerability reported earlier, which was all about a different attack vector and a different vulnerability. The print is dead, man. Don't print. Don't print, man. Print is dead. The June 2021 security update dealt with the other one, according to Microsoft, and did not introduce the new badness. That's been around for a long time. That had existed prior to the update and is still there. Microsoft also confirmed that the Print Nightmare vulnerability is actively being exploited in the wild. Print Nightmare is well-named since it permits attacker to run arbitrary code with system privileges. That's even higher than admin.
Whoa.
Yeah. Miscreant successfully exploiting the vulnerability via a flaw in the Windows Print Spooler service can install programs, fiddle with data, create new accounts with full user rights, wipe out your machine, do anything it wants. It's a system privilege. The zero day was accidentally disclosed earlier this week when an InfoSec research group published proof of concept code for the exploit, mistakenly think it was the one that had already been patched. It hadn't.
Oops.
And the panic then ensued despite the code being hurriedly pulled. Mitigations suggested so far include shutting down the Windows Print Spooler service on domain controllers not used for printing, yanking users from a pre-Windows 2000 legacy group, turning off the Print Spooler on your own machine. If you have a Print Spooler on a network, turn it off. Microsoft's own workarounds start with disabling the Print Spooler service and end with disabling inbound remote printing through group policy. The former stops all printing, while the latter will at least allow local printing, even if print server duties are left broken. It remains very much an evolving situation as Microsoft scrambles to deal with the problem. They have yet to assign a severity to the vulnerability, only saying we are still investigating. Be that as it may, a vulnerability that can gift an attacker system rights on a domain controller is a very, very bad thing. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is a new vulnerability is in every version of Windows. Your choices are, I've shut down my print spooler, I'm not going to bother, I'm getting tired of Windows, Windows, and of course, other. So far we've got 21 votes, and Windows, is well in the lead. Now, if you chose other, or if you just have more to say about this, please head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 3 July 21. A new vulnerability is in every version of Windows. It is particularly insidious if you have a Windows server. And if you have, kill the principaler. Even if there's no printer attached to it, because it doesn't care about printing. It cares about using the print spooler to become a system command. So killing the print spooler, turning that off, will fix it. And
probably most businesses running Windows Server have all their printers in the server print spooler to be managed.
That's exactly right. And if they don't have them there, they have them on their own machines. And those are also vulnerable.
Yep.
And if I can become a system command on your machine and you're attached to the network, I now own the network.
Yep.
So be very, very, very careful. That's important. Also, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I also discovered this week that Opera, the Opera web browser, is now available for Chromebooks.
Oh, nice!
So that's, while it's both good and bad, it runs its own VPN, so that's good.
Yeah.
You don't know who runs that VPN. So
I was gonna
that's
say,
bad.
But.
You know, the fact is it's not your VPN. So do you trust the folks at Opera? Where is that server?
And how secure is it that, right. You know, that it couldn't be hacked?
Right. Opera really is not the end-all, be-all, super wonder device.
No.
We're now live on Facebook.
Stupid Facebook doesn't let me save any of the settings to create a live stream. It's like, go live now, and then you have to put in all your settings separately. I got to figure out a way. There's got to be a way.
To do a script?
To either do a script or to save your settings.
Right. Two people watching.
You know, we had 7 on YouTube.
Yeah, I can't. God bless you, Steve. I can't keep track of all of these things anymore.
How many on Twitch? Twitch is running now, too.
Twitch or Twit?
Twitch.
Well, there's also Twit, which is another broadcasting system.
Yeah. Right.
Soundbites Live. There it is, 7 minutes ago. I've missed 7 minutes of it.
What are we going to do?
Unbelievable. And, of course, we're also on YouTube. So we're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, the live radio, terrestrial radio.
Yep.
We're live on the stream, the Jazz 90.1 stream.
The web stream and in the Jazz app.
And in the Jazz app. So, you have no excuses.
We're a few places.
For not hearing us. Yeah. And now I can open that one. Now, if you leave comments in any of these, we may not see them immediately. Don't get excited if you don't get an instant answer because... we don't like you, but B, we're doing other,
yeah,
doing other things.
Oh, it would help if I plug this in.
Oh, I see. So Rich Simpson is right. There's no sound on the stream.
The computer's set to the right sound device.
Hey, there
I
you
just
go.
Didn't plug into the board yet.
There you go. All right, there we are.
Minor technicality.
I gotta check with Ray and Al, see if I can sneak in here like 20 minutes ahead of time and do it then.
Yeah.
All right, somebody's...
Is that me? It is me. I apologize. It was me.
Well, now the sound is working.
Well, we know the sound is working. Exactly. So that's important. That's good to know.
And I can see the meter bounce over here. That's all right, should have been my first clue.
Oh, you've got the meter. Well, that's all right then. You're good.
Yeah. All right, we did have somebody text in. It's Fred. And he says, hey, guys, three-part question. Actually, on a new Chromebook, I've worked on a document offline that was started online. Let's see, from that, wait a minute, I gotta get the cursor out of the way. From that document, created a new document and sheet via file/new. How could I see is what is saved on the hard drive? Is there an equivalent to Windows Explorer? Is there a media player? Can I download a podcast and listen later? Thanks.
Yes, 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 yes. And then after that, yes.
Okay.
So here's the deal. Done. If you have turned on offline editing in Chrome, then anything you write online or offline gets automatically synced. So there is no difference between what's offline and what's online. In terms of storage, it depends on how much storage you have in your Chromebook as to how much stuff you can put on it. But also, most of them have an SD slot or a micro SD slot. So you can add external storage. For example, when I take a long trip, I load it up with a bucket load of podcasts and movies that I can then watch offline on the plane or whatever I want to do. But that requires a fairly large SD card. But you can do all of that without any real trouble. There is a file app for Chrome. Thank you. There is a file app for Chrome that lets you see all of your downloads and like your Linux files and the files that are stored in your for Play items. So I have my movies and my music and my pictures from Play that I can take with me wherever I go. I don't have to be connected to view them. And the same on my SD card. So you can do all of that. Just look for the file app. It should be in with all your other apps. And you can see everything that it does. In terms of seeing your backed up, your synchronized data, generally speaking, once you've synced it up with your online Google Drive, it deletes it from your system because the system is internet centric.
It doesn't delete it unless it needs to make room to make space.
Right. It makes it. You can't really go look at it. Is what it does. It's in a fairly hidden, secretive area of the system. That's part of the security as well, of course. People can get at your stuff if they can't find it. So mostly you're working online. And I've said this a number of times.
So you can open a card, open a file from an SD card from your actual
local
storage.
You can. Yeah. Absolutely you can. So if you've got something that was originally offline, you can do that. That's easy enough. In addition, like I said, working on files, right? So I said I did this last time I wrote a book. I was sitting in a cafe writing, and all of a sudden I realized everybody was angry because the Wi-Fi had gone down. But I just kept working, no problem at all.
Didn't notice.
Didn't notice, in fact. I closed my machine, went home. Next time I booted it up, it's synced back up to the cloud. And I didn't lose a word, not a letter, not a jot, not a tittle. So it's easy enough to use. Once you turn it on, you're good to go. All right. Was that part one or part three or part, what was that on that?
What? It's all good.
Okay.
I think he had to put it in three tweets because it was three text messages because it was so many words.
Right. Okay, our first caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed, what's up?
Morning, gentlemen, or afternoon. Just a follow-up call from last week. I had called you guys about the fact that I got hacked five times through a bank card.
Right. And
you gave me some information. I had a follow-up that I just do not understand. Incidentally, I went to the bank, and they gave me some, we don't know, basically. And I called Samsung, and nice gentleman said, oh, good, good, we'll get back to you, and I've never heard of him, so I'm calling you guys. Here's what's throwing me. I go into my phone log, and I clear it out anyway, just so nobody can get in there and snoop around. And I found something that's bizarre. There were three Gmails, and this is in my phone log, okay? Names I don't know with addresses I don't know, and I kind of hunched those for the bad guys. But underneath their Gmail address was a little balloon that said not saved. You know, I guess they were trying to make a conversation. But my question is, how in the world can you, on your phone log, how can you call a Gmail address or any email address? Isn't that impossible?
No.
I mean,
here's the deal. If you have... this was in your call log. Was it just a regular Gmail address?
Yeah, right. And I, three Gmail addresses. I don't know those guys.
It could have been a Google Voice phone number with an attached Gmail address.
Yep. That's what I was starting to think.
Time-wise, it was right at the same time that I got hacked, the 6th of June, and this thing showed up.
There have been several phone hack things where someone sends you a maliciously crafted text message, and they can take over your phone and access stuff on your phone.
Like your phone book.
Like your phone book, and they can watch what you do on your phone. So, like, if you type a credit card number in to buy something, they can then capture that number.
Right.
You may want to wipe your phone and set it up again from scratch.
It is possible that you opened a malicious text message. It is also possible you installed a malicious app.
Mm-hmm.
So before
that's what throws me. I didn't, right. All that stuff I never did.
Well, check your...
It can happen automatically by someone sending you a malicious text message.
Check. Right. Yeah, I was going to say, check all the apps that are installed in your on your phone. And make sure those are ones that you actually downloaded and installed. Because, again, it might have done it in the background. Without you doing, you know, knowing anything, you know, you looked at the text. And meanwhile, while you're reading that text, in the background, it's installing that app.
Right.
And there's also a section for permissions. You can see what apps have what permission to do things. It's a good idea to go through that permissions list every now and then. You might remember that, oh, I downloaded this app 6 months ago and gave it permission, but I don't use it anymore. You can remove it from permissions, but you may find an app you don't recognize having permissions to do something in your phone.
Because Samsung, when you buy this phone, there's umpteen things that they already have it pre-loaded.
Yeah, it's pre-loaded.
It's a little tricky to figure out if it's a Samsung pre-installed app or another app.
If it's not something you recognize, try to uninstall it. If it won't uninstall, it was installed by Samsung.
Right.
You really need to do a couple of things. First is to do that. Look through your apps to see what you might not have installed yourself. Two, look through permissions and turn off permissions for anything you don't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Three, go through your call log and your message logs and just delete all the messages from anybody you don't recognize. Then, only once you've done all that and it's synced, then wipe your phone out and reinstall. Because if you don't do it in that order, then any bad stuff that you had saved on your phone comes right back again.
So you're saying a factory reset?
Yes.
Oh, boy. And you're going to... what would I do with that data that, like, sir, for pictures and stuff like that? Do you have to put that on a thumb drive and...
You can just upload to the Google Cloud.
However you sync your phone now with whatever cloud service you sync it to.
Right.
Yeah, it's on the cloud. So I could do a factory reset, and then does it automatically fill it back in again by itself, or I have to do another step once it's in the cloud?
It depends on which version of Android you're running.
I got an Android, and it's automatically goes to the cloud.
Yeah.
Everything.
First, check that everything you want is in the cloud. That's first. Maybe download them all so you have them somewhere else as well. It never hurts to have an extra backup. But then do a factory reset on your phone, and theoretically, depending on what, you know, any version later than I think 6, I think, will automatically reinstall everything that you had.
I know on the iPhone it asks if you want to set up as new or restore from a backup.
Right. I don't think.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right,
I think
right.
If you log in as the same user,
it automatically downloads everything.
Yeah.
The problem there is you have to make sure you clean the phone first, or it just re-downloads the bad stuff.
And the other thing, though, is you might also want to make a note of any apps that you downloaded and installed for yourself that you actually did. Write them down on a separate list because they don't always come back down.
I see.
They usually do, but not always.
And yeah, that's why I say
and
it never
people,
hurts to make the list because then that way you can check it off that, oh, yeah, that one's there. Because too often we install so many and we forget.
Yeah, some people use that as an excuse to delete everything and then only reinstall the ones they're using now instead of all those dozens of apps you thought might be neat and we're going to try and look at and never got around to again.
Yeah.
Good. All right, gentlemen, I'll give that a try. Thank you for help. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah, it's with all of these things, we often give them more trust than they deserve. It does not hurt every once in a while to take a look.
Yep. And it's frustrating that you can't trust stuff like that. I downloaded this app and it's nice. So while both Apple and Google, when they find a malicious app in their stores, they can remove it from the stores. They can also reach into your phone and remove it, which is a little disconcerting. But they only do it for bad programs.
They say they only do it
for bad programs, yeah. But that doesn't stop them from the bad guys from finding and exploiting new things until they're found by the good guys to remove them. And it's very unfortunate that a maliciously crafted text file can lead to a complete takeover of a phone. You know, why does the text messaging app have that much control into it? Well, because it's interpreting what's in there. And someone might send you a picture. Someone might send you a video. So it has to talk to the rest of the system to. If it was limited to text, would probably be a lot safer.
Right. Yeah.
That's the whole problem. We keep adding features, and that adds new threat vectors.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yep.
Opening more holes.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the whole idea behind
the thing.
HTML email.
Yeah.
You know,
looks fun.
It looks fun because you get pictures and you get colors and you get fonts and all the other yada yada, but it also means you get all the bad stuff as well.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing. You've got
all the good, some bad sneaks in.
Right. Right. So be aware. It doesn't hurt to check your call log on your phone, see what's in there, what's going on.
And like I said, just periodically go through and just scan all the apps that are there. Like you say, if it's pre-installed, it won't let you remove it. But, you know, just to go through and say every few months, do I really use this app anymore? Clean it out.
Yep.
Right.
And a lot of phones have the option of either a VIP call list or somewhere, something so that if a number is not in your phone book, it doesn't bother ringing, which means it can stop a lot of solicitation calls. It can stop spam calls. It just doesn't ring if the person's not in your phone book. And then if they leave a message, you can, someone's got a new phone. I'll add them to the phone book. But that can cut down on a lot of crap that way, too.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I want to remind everybody, we will not be having a Soundbites Lounge meeting tomorrow night. It is 4th of July. Happy 4th of July to everyone. I hope you celebrate our nation in style. But also, we will not be having an Ask Nick Lounge this coming week. my in-laws are in town. That's the night we're going to dinner, and the reality is I like to sleep with both eyes closed, so I'll be doing that instead of the lounge meeting.
Say happy Independence Day to our neighbors to the north. Canada Day was July 1st.
There's
like 30 Independence Days in July.
Yeah.
Mostly from Britain.
Mostly from Britain.
I'm really feeling sorry, though, for all the pets, though, for the 4th of July.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't buy fireworks.
I mean, our neighborhood, there are so many. My dogs are oblivious to it. But my neighbor's dog, I feel so bad for that dog. He winds up going and cowering into the bathroom and that because he's literally terrified of all the fireworks that are constantly going off.
And even vets. We had a customer the other day was telling us he's got PTSD and someone idiot set off fireworks at 2 a.m. and he jumps out of bed, reaches for his rifle, and goes into combat mode.
Yeah, no question.
And went next door, kicked the door in, and police had to show up. And, of course, he knew the cops. It's one of those guys that knows everybody.
You're right, right.
Then
you know, not his fault. I get it. Yeah. Absolutely get it.
But it's just not fair to the pets. You know, their hearing is so sensitive.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't buy fireworks this year. Buy a bag of dog food for your local shelter and
donate that.
Hug your dog.
Yeah. The sparklers aren't bad.
Dogs don't mind.
For Father's Day, we had some fountains. In fact, we were setting it off at my daughter's house, and one of the neighbors started bringing theirs out, so it kind of became. And so then my son had to go buy more because we ran out.
Yeah, of course.
But the bang pop ones, yeah, those are bad.
As a matter of fact, that means since today's the 3rd, that means the Ring of Fire are around a number of the different lakes.
Yep.
Like Keuka and Canandaigua and all that, to the Ring of Fire. That was always fun. My sister used to have a place down on the lake, and that was always cool to see the people put the flares.
Yeah.
And then they had the north and the south barges, and the barges would go up and down. They were synced them opposite so that they were one was coming up, the other was going down. And setting off fireworks.
Yep.
And it was cool.
And aphelion is on Monday.
That's
Our farthest point in our orbit around the sun.
Right.
So this is the coldest it gets.
Yeah. Don't start that.
Yeah.
Well, the sun is just starting to wake up. We're going into the first, the next cycle, sun cycle. So, you know, these folks with the GPS and everything else.
Yep.
You ham guys?
For us ham guys, it's great. For us guys. But for the folks with GPS and all that, they can mess up your GPS system big time
not
with
just
the solar
GPS,
flares.
But also radio and television signals and also computers. Because there'll be lots more gamma radiation zipping its way through your machines.
Oh, the solar flares and all that. But for us ham operators, you know, it means sometimes. You couldn't, I always talk about this one band. Most of the time I could spit farther. But now with the sun cycle acting up, I'm getting halfway around the world.
Yeah,
it's just goofy like that.
But, that was just this morning at 15:03 UTC, the first X-class solar flare.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's, on the space weather is what just exploded. Pretty big chunk of the sun just exploded.
Well, a pretty minor piece of the sun compared itself.
Yeah, but pretty big compared to us.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's going to happen, and folks should be aware of it because, you know, if you're using that GPS device to find something in that, don't be surprised if all of a sudden it goes bonkers over the next few years because that's the way it's going to get.
Yep. I have to say, we already talked about Opera on Chromebooks. But I just finally got around to starting up my phone hub where you can connect your phone to your Chromebook for all kinds of things. And so I did that and just got my text message on my phone now. So I can answer my text messages right in my Chromebook. I can enable my hotspot if I want to. I can silence my phone. I can locate the phone, do all kinds of things. I know what the battery charge is on my phone, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
That's all right out of Phone Hub, which is part of the Chrome OS. So I've been looking at that little icon for how many months now? Yeah. Finally, just the other day, I thought, you know what? I got 10 minutes. Let me play with it.
No, here's a report that the FT8 ham bands were all down this morning because that's the frequency of the solar flare.
Yeah. Normally I see all these signals coming, you know, going across it. It's just jammed. It's like a waterfall. And all this stuff is like you see in
the Matrix.
Matrix. Yeah, all the it's coming down. And all of a sudden it went boop. Nothing now.
How'd it go?
Boop. Yeah. And I'm wondering, wait a minute. What's going on here? Because this thing was just jammed. I mean, I couldn't find a blank spot in it to get on there. And then all of a sudden, it's all gone.
Yeah, yeah. All right, remember last week we talked about all the tsuris that's going to be happening for the people who can't run Windows 11 because they don't have a TPM in their machine. Well, Microsoft's Windows 11 system requirements have caused a stir. Not least because of the seemingly arbitrary processor limits. There's also processors you can't use. Microsoft also states that a machine must have a trusted platform module, or TPM, and a 2.0 version of it. 1.2, not good enough.
Isn't good enough?
The heck with you, must be 2.0. Mm. While many modern laptops do indeed have a TPM 2.0 chip, desktop motherboards do not. On the face of it, you would need to purchase a TPM 2.0 chip to run Windows 11, which currently sell for exorbitant amounts because of the chip shortage.
Yeah.
And now the price just went up because Windows requires them. Initially, Microsoft stated that the TPM 1.2 chip would do, but it has since clarified that only TPM 2.0 will do. However, that is not necessarily the case.
Oh, they're backtracking or backpedaling?
Or my favorite line from Independence Day. That's not entirely accurate.
Oh, yeah. When they asked about the aliens.
The aliens. Yeah. If your machine does not have a dedicated TPM chip, your CPU may have an equivalent built in. Specifically, Intel integrates Platform Trust Technology, or Intel PTT, in its modern processors, while AMD uses something called PSP-FTPM, whatever that stands for. Well, we know what the TPM stands for, but the rest we don't know. Many motherboard manufacturers disable these by default, but you can enable them from the motherboard BIOS. Every BIOS is different, so we recommend reading your motherboard's manual first. In short, you do not necessarily need to rush out and purchase a TPM module to run a TPM chip to run Windows 11 on your desktop machine. Hopefully, Microsoft clarifies this in its Windows 11 system requirements at some stage, because Intel and AMD do not readily market their PTT and PSP FTPM technologies as TPM 2.0 alternatives. Microsoft has also released its inaugural Windows 11 Insider Preview build and has updated its processor requirements to accommodate the Zen 1 and 7th Gen Core families. As far as we can tell, there is only one downside to using Intel PTT or AMD PSP FTPM, cheese and crackers, over a dedicated TPM 2.0 chip. If you don't use a dedicated TPM 2.0 chip, and if you enable BitLocker, then all your keys will be saved to your processor, not to the separate chip. And then changing your processor at some point in the future will remove your BitLocker keys, and that'll cause problems.
Simpler? Get a Chromebook.
Get a Chromebook. So either just don't enable BitLocker or don't change your processor ever. So, are you still hot for Windows 11? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
With all those acronyms.
Yeah, and like we frequently say, every time some new OS comes out, the vast majority of average people are better off just buying a new computer with it pre-installed.
Right.
For those of you that like to tinker, you can try to install it yourself and be ready to tinker for days to get things to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a number of friends who are very highly skilled technologists, and even they are reluctant to install the preview build. They're all saying, we always wait because Microsoft.
Yeah.
But secondly, let them settle what they're doing with TPM before we get involved.
Like we used to always say, you could always tell the pioneers. They are the ones with the arrows in their back.
Adam Osborne, yeah.
Yeah, and back in the day, it used to be fun. But we didn't have, back in that those times, as much hardware difference.
Right.
You know, all the different video cards and sound cards and mice and DVD drives and motherboards and chips. There was not the big variety that there is now. And, yeah, no.
Mm-mm. And it's interesting to me the difference between Windows and Mac people. Mac people, when their hardware goes out of date, they grumble, but they just keep using the old version.
Mm-hmm.
If when when Apple tells them they have to buy a brand new machine to run the new thing, about half of them just say, I'll just keep running the old thing. And the other half go, okay, I'll just buy a new machine then. Thanks.
Yep.
Windows people, it makes them crazy.
Yeah.
I bought this machine and it ran Windows XP just fine. Now I want it to run Windows 11. Why the heck not?
Yep. Although every now and then you do find them the other way. We had a customer come in this week. He bought a new Mac, you know, like 6 months ago. And it's horrible. Worst thing ever. Can't run anything on it. Well, what do you mean? All of the 10-year-old software he copied from his 10-year-old Mac won't run.
Yeah.
And so that means the Mac is terrible.
Yeah.
Well, no, you just have to buy new versions. It's 10 years.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. But there's no backwards compatibility?
There is. You get
up to a point.
Four,
I mean,
four five, six,
years,
maybe 7 years, but 10 years? Yeah, not,
well, that's
not much.
In 10 years, Apple has changed their processor twice.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I would throw at them, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't help.
Yeah, no, nobody cares. People just want what they want. It's a very weird thing. Well, the same thing is true of Chromebooks. They eventually go out of, and they get end of life.
Out of phase.
And you can tell that quite easily by going into your gear. And
the gear is the little item down in the lower right-hand corner, folks.
Right. And then click About Chrome OS, and then Additional Details. And you'll see the update schedule. For example, mine says this device will get automatic software and security updates until June of 2026. So I've got five more years, just shy of five more years for updates to this machine. And I'm firmly of the belief that 5 years from now I'll be ready for a new machine anyway.
Maybe.
But
if not sooner.
Right.
Or so, if it isn't replaced with your...
Don't say it. I haven't gotten a 400 yet.
400 with big screen.
Don't say it. Damn. Shut up.
That's a little hard to carry. Although you could plug it into that monitor.
No, he can.
Yeah, there's a cable right there on the table for it.
Oh, there you go.
You can, now I'm actually excited.
You could turn, back yourself in the corner and just stare that way.
That's funny. That's funny.
That could work.
That's just a little keyboard. Everything's in it. All you got to do is bring the cable's already here. You already got a power supply.
There is a cable somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah.
I don't know where it is, but there is one.
plugged it in on my computer once.
Or HDMI. There's an HDMI cable.
That's what it is.
It's an HDMI cable. Yeah. I can plug it into this, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere.
No. Well, you need the.
I need the thing. For
the adapter. Yeah.
Well, that's no biggie. You just get the cable and pull it up and have the little keyboard play it around.
Shut up. Seriously, shut up. Doggone you! I hate you. I hate you in ways I cannot say on the radio. That's how much I hate you.
But look at all that real estate you'd have to play with on that screen. Yeah, that TV is unbelievable.
That would be funny, though.
You may want that.
You think I might? I don't really need it yet. It was fully charged when I sat down.
Right. It must have fallen. Oh, yeah. It's that big. The HDMI one's that big, heavy one over there.
Oh, yeah. There it is. I see it. All right. Yeah.
That would be so cool to mount one. I'd love to have that for my ham room. Put that up there and...
Yeah.
Play around.
So when your computer dies, is it plugged in at both ends?
Yeah.
Exactly. And you would have forgot your adapter because it wasn't plugged into the computer.
Yeah, right. Oh, my.
How many times has the power strip been plugged into itself? And that's why the computer doesn't work?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I had charged this up yesterday, and so it was still about 98%, so I didn't bother to plug it in, but might as well keep it charged up for now. But yeah, the Chromebooks have now, for a while, I just did it myself this week, I have a thing called Phone Hub, and it lets you connect your Android phone to your Chromebook, and then you can get an answer, take and answer your text messages, do all kinds of, you know, stuff, mm-hmm. see who's calling, blah, 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 without having to get your phone out. So it's a pretty nice deal for people who spend their day on their Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it much more convenient.
Yeah, Apple has that built into the OS features right. through your Apple ID. So it's like you get home, you put your phone on the charger, then you can answer your phone calls on your laptop or your iPad when you're on the couch.
Right, exactly. You don't have to be carrying your phone around with you.
Yeah.
As long as you've got that that laptop with you. So, yeah, that works out pretty nicely. There's a whole it's a whole series of really nice things that Chromebooks do. All right, what do you...
In fact, there's so many things that no one person can ever find them all. So that's one reason we're here. And
well, and that's the other big thing, though.
Read Nick's book on some of the tips.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the other big thing is they don't have to pay for an operating system. So they don't have to worry about getting patches that are going to muck it up or brick it. Viruses, spyware, malware, gone. And it's a, you know, well, it can't be 100%. Well, nothing is 100%. Mm-hmm. But hello, Chromebook is smart enough to know that if something's changed in the registry, it compares it against the master. And the two don't match, it doesn't allow it to happen.
Right. And basically, it's got a TPM 2.0 chip built into it. That's what does all this stuff. And the other thing is, you know, people keep saying, well, what can I do on a Chromebook? Well,
what can't you do? You
can do anything on a Chromebook. I grant you, if you are a video editor or an audio editor, and that is your main function, you will be hard-pressed to find a product that does all the high-end stuff.
Yeah.
But then if you're a video or audio editor, you're probably, at the very least, a high-end PC person, mm-hmm. if not a high-end Mac person. And that's not going to change.
Right.
Get
and
over
you,
yourself.
And you have clients that you can bill that right. you then...
So
have
you can buy
good,
that $10,000 laptop or desktop.
Yeah,
and I get that. But if you're you know, the average person rarely needs more than a Chromebook. Mm. And it's convenient and easy and inexpensive. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I was actually considering recently buying another Raspberry Pi and loading Linux on it and making that my Linux machine on the cheap. Is that a good idea? Is Raspberry Pi sufficient to run Linux?
Short answer, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Long answer, heck yes. I have a Raspberry Pi 4 with 8 gig of RAM, and I run Linux on it. I run it used to be called Raspbian, and now I think it's just called Raspberry OS. But it is Linux.
Yeah,
isn't most of the Pi OSs?
Almost all of them
Linux?
Are some form of Linux. You can get a version of Windows.
I just found a website at FossMint, free and open source. 20 best operating systems you can run on a Raspberry Pi.
And all of them are Linux.
Yeah.
Except I think one.
Oh, here's one called Noobs. New out of the box.
Right, and that lets you install all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I'm running the Raspberry Pi OS, which used to be called Raspbian. A lot of people still call it that. And it is a Linux very much like Ubuntu. I use all the same commands at the command line. I have LibreOffice and all the other yada yadas on it. And it runs just fine. And again, it's not going to be as fast as your 2 gigahertz laptop because it's only 1.8, I think, gigahertz or 1.6. But it's certainly fast enough to do the majority of things. And if it's a machine that you're learning Linux on or you want to play with Linux on, you're absolutely right, Larry. It's a cheap buy-in and a great way to learn.
Well, I wanted to put Ubuntu on it. I'm a little more familiar with Ubuntu than some of the other versions.
It'll work.
That should work. I think there are Ubuntu versions.
Now, you're going to run it off a micro SD or an SD hard drive? SSD hard drive.
I have a couple of micro SDs. I suppose I was just going to load it onto the Raspberry Pi. I guess I'm not quite sure which one to do.
Ubuntu Core, Ubuntu Mate.
Yeah, I mean,
Ubuntu's.
Ubuntu.
Well, I
dot
the LS version, the long service version.
Right. Here's the thing. There is a version of Ubuntu for Raspberry Pi. And you can get it at ubuntu.com/raspberry-pi.
Now, is that somehow different?
No, well, the Raspberry Pi uses an ARM processor as opposed to an Intel processor, so they had to recompile it for the ARM processor. That's the difference.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Matter of fact, there's a guy who did a test on the various SSD micro SSD cards. He's got a number of YouTube videos up there. It's LEEP. I forget the full name. But if you search YouTube and say Twister, you'll see his name there. And he, you can search the rest of his videos. And he's got one, though, on the micro SSD, the SD cards. And he rated a bunch of different ones to get the best one.
Yeah,
for the speed.
You can make your machine feel a whole lot faster by putting a faster card in it.
Yep.
Okay. You know, but the Raspberry Pi is certainly cheap enough that even the very latest version is so cheap. I was just going to, I've got a couple of older monitors at home, so I was going to Velcro it to the back of that. And
yep. A lot of people do that.
Use it that way as my Linux machine.
Yep. A lot of people do that.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't. I still hate spending money when I don't use something, so I just wanted to make sure that that Raspberry Pi would get the job done.
It absolutely will. Again, get the 8-gig version, get the Raspberry Pi 4.
Right, right. Okay, well, thank you as usual, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's it. Our first hour is done, but don't go away. We've got a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are the longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue with your generous support to be member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Dan did from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I've got a Chromebook. And I've got to run a Windows-based program, and I need to find out if there's an easy Linux version I can install on that, or can I run it through my Chrome browser.
What is the program?
It's for running some stuff, changing some programs in my vehicle.
Oh, okay.
You can run a program called Crossover, which is a version of Wine that will run many Windows applications inside of a Linux layer like Chrome. I am trying to bring up their list right now for a car specific app. I don't know if they'll have it in their compatibility list, but it's a free. Well, the Crossover itself isn't free, but they have a free trial.
Wine, however, itself will work.
But then you have to set it all up manually,
right?
So Crossover is all set up for you within a simple installer.
Okay. So is there a Linux one? Is Linux hard to set up and get going?
You already have Linux in Chrome OS.
You just have to start it. It's a the easiest way to do that is in your settings.
Hiding somewhere. Nick is looking for it.
I'm looking for it. It should actually these days. No, it's no longer beta, so it should be right in your list of programs. If you hit that little dot in the lower left, and then search through your list of programs, you should see it listed there. Depending on which version of Linux you're running, which version of Chrome you're running, it might be called. There's two that you can run. One is called, I think, just Terminal is what they call it now. And when you run it, it'll take a minute to start, and then it'll say that hi, how are you? It'll come back and say that it's ready. That it'll say starting Linux, and it'll beep for a minute. It'll do some stuff, and then it'll say ready, and then you can run pretty much whatever you want.
It may end up being easier to invite a friend over with a Windows PC and have a few drinks and get your car working.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but it is possible.
Thank you very much. All right, thank you very much for your time.
Yep. Good luck. Yeah. It as we've been saying, pretty much you can do dang near anything except. If it's a specialized program that, for example, only runs in Windows or only runs on a Mac, then you cannot run that on a Chromebook without some hoopla. Certainly, if you run Wine or Crossover, then yes, you can run a Linux program. A Windows program on Linux. You still can't run Mac programs.
There are ways to run Mac OS in a VM, but it's not licensed for that. So it's not legal to do that.
Right. And we do
But it works.
We do not condone illegality on this program.
Yep. Nor do we suggest it.
That is exactly correct. Now, you said we had some text messages come in?
Yeah, that one, I read it to Steve. It's a Mac.
Yeah, he's working with someone who needs a new Mac, and they're looking at a 16-inch, which is still Intel-based, and wondering
Pro.
Yeah, a MacBook Pro 16-inch, wondering if they should still if they should get an Intel Mac or get an M1 Mac they're working that way. For the things that he said they're running, web stuff and email, 16-inch is way overkill. The 16-inch Mac is an 8-core i9. It's a video editing 3D modeling powerhouse suite for $2,500. What we are seeing now, the M1 chip is so fast, even at the low end, a $999 MacBook Air is just super, super fast for virtually everything you need it to run. And even programs that haven't been recompiled for M1 yet are working pretty good in the Rosetta 2 translator. If he's still listening, which I hope he is because he asked a question, if there was a specific Intel-only app that they were looking at needing to run, that could be a different answer. And for that, in that case, you can still get the lower-end 13-inch Intel Macs. They start at $1,799 for a quad i7, I think it is. that will still be the Intel machine. If you have an Intel-only program that company has said they're not going to upgrade. In general, all the Mac models will be moving to the M1s. Right now, all the low-end models have. The high-end models will through the rest of this year. They said last year it would be a two-year transition. It's probably going to be done a little sooner than that because they've got all the low-end models done.
What that means is if you are still running an Intel version of something, it may no longer work after a while.
Right. The companies that make the software, before that, so on the new M1 Apple chips, in the software, in the OS, there's a program called Rosetta 2 that translates the Intel program into the M1 program, all the code inside. And for almost every program, that works just fine. And companies that make software have been releasing new M1 versions of their software over the last couple of years that we've known this was coming. And so a lot of the software has already been converted to M1, and the rest of the software is going to be converted. The problem you may run into is if you have a very old program that's not supported anymore that doesn't have a new version. Then you'll run into a problem that the new OS comes with the new computer comes with a new OS, and it may not run the very old software. Because the other difference is last year Apple went to 64-bit only. So if you have a 32-bit app, it will not run anymore. Windows 11 is doing that now. So Windows 11 is 64-bit only, and your 32-bit apps will stop working. And so depending on how old your app is, that may be an even bigger issue versus M1 versus Intel. So if you have a really old app like that, you might want to start trying to find an equivalent difference. We've got a customer that's running an ancient database program that was discontinued like 10 years ago. And at the time, there were all sorts of migration tools to migrate to a different database program.
They didn't choose to go that way.
Didn't choose to go that way, yeah. And now that database program, they have switched their marketing focus away from individuals and onto corporations. So the cost has skyrocketed because companies have deeper pockets and they have a monthly license you can pay now for a seat license. So it makes it trickier to run this really old software that you haven't upgraded in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a very tough thing.
Especially when your business is relying on it.
I remember we had a customer that was running a DOS-based accounting program, and something about Windows 7 broke their DOS program. So we had to figure out how to convert all the data into a new program back when there were no conversion options. So trying to export the data from DOS was tricky. I think it was a DBase back-end structure that the front POS was accessing, so we were able to convert a DBase into something else and finally got it working. You wait 20 years to upgrade your software. There's going to be problems.
There's going to be problems. That's simply the way that works. I get it. We have to keep reminding people that technology moves on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all get comfortable, we all get complacent, and we all get cheap. We all do, let's admit it. And that means that we often run things much longer than their life cycle would warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to hardware, as long as you have good backups, no big deal. But when it comes to software, particularly when it comes to bespoke software, something that you are, that someone wrote specifically for you or specifically for your niche market. Eventually, if that company goes out of business or no longer supports the 20-year-old version of your program, you are out of luck.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do at that point except pay an awful lot of money.
We had a printing company had a vinyl cutter, and the vinyl cutter PC booted from a floppy disk to run the vinyl cutting software interface. And it had an ancient AppleCare stack on it. So now we're in the late 80s. And that put its network into the rest of the Macs that had the designing program on it, which was kept up to date. But, you know, years ago when Apple stopped doing Apple talk,
right,
in favor of IP like everybody else,
right,
it was quite a hassle trying to get this vinyl cutter to work on a new computer, because the vinyl cutter itself was fine. It was just the interface computer. And you know, it was $50,000 to buy a new vinyl cutter. But there's nothing wrong with the vinyl cutter. Just fix the computer. I didn't write the program.
Right. And that's the other thing. People, you know, when it's a generic hardware product, or you're the authorized dealer like you are for Macs, fixing a system that still has parts available is not that big a deal.
Yeah.
When you're talking about software, the original manufacturer is out of business and you don't have the source code, you're kind of done.
Yeah. You're toast.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Just a security question. On occasion, when I'm, say, if I'm out of town, I'm in a hotel, and I have used my flash drive with some information, and I use their printer in their business center. Our printers have any type of memory where they could, you know, have a memory and have that on their file somewhere?
Yes.
Some of them do, especially the higher-end models.
Yeah, because I know, like, if you make a copy, say go to Staples, make a copy.
Yep.
They have a memory in there, and that's entered in their... in their memory, and people have been buying the computer, buying the copiers just to access.
Pull the hard drive out and see everything that was ever copied on it.
Yes, yeah exactly. So is that not a safe thing to do? Is there anything I could do after I make the printer, like clearing some type of a cache or anything like that?
If it's a lower end, you know, consumer based inkjet printer, it probably doesn't have a memory.
Okay.
But if you're in a business center and it's a higher end, you know, commercial copier, there probably is a hard drive. So it scans the files onto the hard drive and then prints it from the hard drive.
I mean the printer.
Yeah.
Okay. So it scans it on the hard drive of the computer.
The hard drive in the printer.
Okay. And the printer has a hard drive also.
And then prints it from that hard drive. Yeah.
Is there any way to clear that out of the printer memory or not?
Take the copier printer apart and pull the hard drive out.
Okay, I'll bring my screwdriver and hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends entirely on the printer.
Okay.
Each printer that has a hard drive generally has a wipe disk function. How you get to it depends on what printer it is.
Okay.
Whether you can get to it depends on whether it's behind an admin.
It's usually an administrative function.
Right.
And many business center type printers are under a service contract, and so even the people working there don't have administration access.
Right.
So bottom line is,
you can't
send anything with sensitive information.
It's about right.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to confirm that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've read stories about, there was an article about a company that bought a bunch of these old copiers, and it made local news because one of them turned out to be from a Buffalo area police station, and they got the criminal records, private, you know, police records from anyone that ever went through their station because it was in the hard drive of the copier. Same thing with ATMs. There's the paper receipt you get, there's a duplicate receipt roll on the inside. And a lot of times when those machines are sold, those paper rolls aren't removed.
Yep.
If I guess if you're lucky, they didn't take the cash out either. And that's why you might buy. But there was a big scam for a while with people buying used ATMs, stick it in a mall, and collect PIN numbers.
Yep.
If you were really good, you'd put a few thousand dollars in it so it wasn't suspicious.
Right.
And just collect PIN numbers for months.
But, yeah, you want to be very careful of where you strew your data about.
Yeah.
There's just no way to be absolutely certain when you use someone else's system that your data aren't compromised in some way. And that includes, as we were talking about, Opera, right? Opera is now available for Chromebooks, and they say, you know, well, we have our own VPN and we're super secure and yada yada. Who's running that VPN? Where is it? Who has access to the data going through it?
And how really secure is it?
Yeah. Right. If you really need to have something printed, go to the big box store, buy a $30 printer, and print it, and then take it home, and you'll have an extra printer.
Right. Yeah. It is very difficult to keep your data secure. You really have to be a lot more paranoid than you think you do. Tom is well on his way. Congratulations, Tom, for being as paranoid as you are. You're right. And by the way, folks, in your homes, if you've printed sensitive data on your printer, and then you decide to get rid of that printer, you might want to check to see if there's a wipe disk function.
Yeah.
If not, you may want to open up that printer and have a hammer handy. You know, if you're giving it to your kids, maybe you don't worry about that. But,
yeah.
You know, pretty much anything else, you really want to, you do want to make sure that at the very least, you wipe the disk. And as we said, most of them have that. You can find that either by tediously going through all the admin functions or just looking in your manual. I know that's blasphemous, but you can do it.
If they can even find it.
Right.
Well, that's the other thing, though. A lot of places now, they don't come with the manual. You've got to go online and download it because that's one more thing that they have to print.
That's interesting.
And, you know, the people don't take the time. Well, it didn't come with one. And, you know, or they get it and they, you know, maybe look at it online but don't print it off. Because I only needed to check one part for set and say something up, and they read that part, and okay, and then.
I've got manuals on my hard drive for devices I threw out 10 years ago. I admit it. I just keep the manuals.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to look in my print queue for my printer at home, and it remembers every job I printed.
Yes.
I might be able to even open the cache of that job if I dug a little deeper.
You probably could.
But at least it at a minimum shows me the name of the file that I printed.
Yep. And so, you could probably do that for your work printers as well.
Yeah. So yeah. I could probably put that back in the queue and have it print again.
Yes. You ought to try that with some little thing just to see what you get when you get home.
Will it actually, or does it just keep the header the name?
Well, it depends on whether he's looking at the log, which is just the name.
This may just be the log.
Yeah, that, I think that might just
or
be the
actual printer itself. So... I love this story. After years of relative calm, Google and Microsoft are tossing out their ceasefire, a move that perhaps ironically could bring each company additional antitrust security. The non-aggression pact signed 5 years ago lets the two companies set aside their numerous lawsuits. It also created a process by which they could resolve conflicts behind closed doors, requiring Microsoft and Google to follow that process before asking regulators to step in. During this time, the two companies have tussled over a number of issues, including whether search engines should pay news publishers. But Microsoft reached the end of its rope when it felt Google wasn't playing fair in ad tech. Both companies attempted to solve the impasse through a series of escalating negotiations as laid out in the agreement. The matter ultimately reached the corner office, with CEOs Satya Nadella and Sundar Pichai holding a series of talks that didn't reach a resolution. That lack of a resolution is what apparently led to the agreement's unraveling. The ad tech problem surfaced just 3 years into the agreement when Microsoft complained that Google was dragging its feet in supporting some of Bing's new ad formats in one of its ad management tools, Search Ads 360. In addition, an antitrust lawsuit filed by state attorneys general claimed that Google also favors its own platform by offering automated auctions to optimize bids. An equivalent tool isn't available to advertisers seeking to book space on Bing. As a result of the moves, or lack thereof, advertisers using Google's ad platform found it easier to buy ads on Google, not Bing. Other search engines that rely on Bing are also affected, including DuckDuckGo, Yahoo, and Ecosia. We raised the concerns with them, and they just turned a deaf ear, Microsoft President Brad Smith said earlier this year. Well, now you know how everybody else on Earth feels.
Yeah, really.
Google's unwillingness to work with Bing, he said, was costing the company hundreds of millions of dollars per year in ad revenue. By not cooperating, the two companies are opening themselves to additional antitrust scrutiny. Because the non-aggression pact attempted to head off clashes before they reached regulators, antitrust officials had fewer formal complaints to draw on when opening investigations or filing lawsuits. But without the pact in place, Microsoft and Google are free to complain about each other to whichever regulators or politicians will listen. And today, there seem to be quite a few. So, Google versus Microsoft, which one do you root for? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, Microsoft is definitely scrambling because they don't really have anything new. I mean, the OS, so they rearrange things like we were talking about in the upcoming 11. Oh, they're moving the start button to the center. Whoopie-fa-doopie.
Yeah.
It's just going to tick a bunch of people off just because you couldn't come up with something better. There's nothing new or innovated. It doesn't do the, oh, this thing I got to have and I'll be waiting up until midnight to purchase it. You know, got to have things like the old days.
Windows 95, boy, do I remember that.
Yeah. And but that's the whole thing. Even with their, as far as just the operating system staying the same, same with their word processing, their spreadsheets and everything else. They don't do anything other than what I can get do with any of the freebies.
Right.
The freebies
well,
that's
the real problem, right? What all of these companies have come up against is the fact that the freebies do what 99.9% of the people want.
Yeah.
And so they have to integrate them into things like the Microsoft Teams business.
Yeah.
Right? You can integrate that now. Google is doing it by giving everybody Google Workspace. So you can integrate all of their stuff, including Google Talk and all of that, yada, yada.
And with the race to the bottom, as it's called, with lower and lower priced apps, people don't want to spend money on a traditional application. You used to go to the store and buy a program. It was $300-$400 for a decent program. Now you get mad that it's 99 cents in the app store.
Yeah. Right. And because they're things like LibreOffice and Google Docs and iWork and all whatever they call it. What did they call it this week?
They sort of dropped that whole iWork branding. It's now just Pages, Keynote, and Numbers.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are confused. Excuse me, are Soundbites.
I want my piña colada now.
No, he messed it. I just see it right now. He should have two items switched.
Yeah. That's all right.
All right. We've been talking about this, but I actually have a news item about it. As far as third-party browsers go, there are none that are fully optimized for Chromebooks and Chrome OS. That is until now because of the popular Opera browser. Designed to offer a feature-rich alternative to Google Chrome, the latest Opera browser for Chromebook is effectively an enhanced and optimized version of the Android app. Certain changes and tweaks have been made to the Android app to ensure that those using Chrome OS can enjoy a very familiar experience for the desktop version. To make browsing on Chromebooks as easy, fast, and lightweight as possible, Opera for Chromebook was built based on the Opera browser for Android with custom optimizations that deliver a full-fledged laptop experience while maintaining all its unique features. The suite of new features includes keyboard shortcuts, a free built-in VPN, ad blocking, and even a crypto wallet, if you trust them. There are some advanced GDPR cookie blocking options, too, which should eliminate annoying pop-ups and dialog boxes. And so far, I haven't seen any, but I haven't done any extensive testing with it yet. That's not all, as Opera Browser on Chromebooks even have direct integrations for popular messaging applications such as WhatsApp, Telegram, and Facebook Messenger. There are similar integrations for social media sites such as Twitter and Instagram. They even have a dark mode and a blue light reducing night mode, along with five color schemes that can switch between at any, or switch among, excuse me, at any time. To help make the switch between devices simple, Opera for Chrome OS install includes the ability to scan a QR code. This will sync all of your notes, bookmarks, images, and certain small files between browsers on separate devices. If you want to try an Opera browser for your Chromebook, you can download it from the Google Play Store. So, Opera or Chrome? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. So far, I've been using it, like I said, just a couple of days, intermittently. But it seems, at least, to have everything. It has bookmarks. It has speed dial. It has offline pages. You can take snapshots. You can go full screen. You can, of course, print from it, save as a PDF. Translate, share, send to their Flow program. You can do pretty much whatever you need to do.
Is it based on Chromium, or did they write their own underlying engine?
No, I'm looking on the Opera.
Oh, the Opera underlying engine. Yeah. Nice.
So for those of you who are looking for an alternative to Chrome, or for those of you who like Opera to begin with, you can now get the Opera browser in Chrome. Like I said, they tout their security, but you do have caveats, one of which is who runs their VPN.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've, on my list right after buying a Raspberry Pi 400 is setting up my own VPN.
Yep.
Which I can do.
I found with Greenlight, you need to buy a static IP to have your own VPN, because they do high-grade commercial NAT.
Right. Right.
So my VPN didn't work when I switched over.
Right. Yes, that's true. You do have to do that. But if you are serious about security, it's a small price to pay.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, Opera's secure enough for many people, but you do need to be aware that it is not actually 100% secure. If you're main goal is to not have anybody snoop what you're doing while you're in the coffee shop, then the regular browsers work just fine as long as you're in HTTPS, which pretty much everybody is now, because Google is gigging people if they're not.
Yeah. One of the things is to, you have to figure out who you want to be private from.
Right.
And one of the worst ones is your ISP. Your internet service provider knows everywhere you go because they're sending you there, and they know how long you spend, they know what you click on, and they're selling that data to advertisers. And the laws of courts have upheld laws that say that's legal to do. So that's why a lot of people do run a VPN. So then instead of the ISP knowing what website you're going to, they just know that the VPN endpoint. So whoever runs that VPN knows everywhere you do go and everything you do.
Right.
That's why you need to trust that VPN endpoint.
Right. And if you trust Opera's VPN, then you're good to go. Otherwise, it's just that's where your pain point now resides. And that's true of every VPN. You know, if you trust NordVPN or OpenVPN or any of those, that's how that works. If you run your own VPN, you can throw away all of the data that come through. And then you never, you know, there's nothing left on your drive. Even if somebody breaks into your VPN, they get nothing because there is nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of commercial VPN services I've heard advertised on the podcast I listen to, and they have a, basically the server is running on a RAM.
Right.
So when you close your VPN session, the VPN is gone. If the authorities try to confiscate the server, power goes off, it's gone.
Right. And that's the that is the safest. Well,
yeah.
The fact is, if they freeze the RAM,
if you got a couple of seconds to freeze the RAM with liquid nitrogen,
right?
Or sometimes Freon works.
Sometimes,
then you have a few seconds to reapply power to get the contents of RAM back.
Right. So you freeze the RAM, and then you plug it into another machine, turn it on. And if you caught it, then you get the data.
Yeah.
But that's generally speaking, if you're, you know, is there a way to be 100% secure in the internet? Yes. It involves a pair of scissors and your network cable and then a bucket of cement and your computer. But beyond that, you pick where your pain point is. You pick, you pick where your, you know, point of entry point of danger, rather, is.
What's becoming kind of interesting is the operating systems are putting in more anti-tracking abilities. The latest iOS will pop up a message. Do you want to ask this app not to track you? And the apps are now saying, please let us track you. When they called it targeted advertising, it didn't sound as bad.
Right.
But it's tracking. And somebody did a study, I don't know where they got their data from, that 98% of the people said don't track me. And if you want the concept of targeted ads is good. I only want to see ads related to stuff I might want to buy.
That sounds so beautiful.
Right, but it has to track you and record everything you click on to know what you like and what you might want to buy. Yesterday on my computer at work, I'm doing some research on something, and down the side, I see an ad from Horizon Hobby with the four airplanes I want to buy on it.
Yeah.
I guess the targeted ads are working.
Place. Yeah, right. My problem is...
gentle reminder.
Yeah.
Right. My problem is whenever my wife is out, she calls me up and says, look this up. My daughter does the same thing.
Screws up your
history. I look stuff up. I don't know who Google thinks I am, but I have some really eclectic taste.
Yeah. Christmas time, I buy my wife's Christmas presents online, and she likes reading romance novels and listening to country music. I don't like either of those. Yeah, right. But for months, that's all I see in my ads.
Yep. There's no provision in their algorithms for this is outside their normal buying cycle. And it's Christmas.
Yep.
Maybe we'll ignore it.
I wish there was a I bought that button
and
stop showing me ads for it, especially if it's cheaper now.
Or you're no longer interested in it.
Here's what makes me more insane than I normally am. I keep getting emails from Amazon. Here's a product we think you might like. I just had it delivered yesterday.
Yeah.
From Amazon.
Yeah.
That makes me crazy.
Or you bought it a while ago. Oh,
I
right below it, I get an email saying, rate your purchase of this same thing.
Yep.
Talk to each other, people. Talk to each other.
I like the ones that says, treat yourself and something out of my wish list.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Oh, and then speaking of that, there's Wish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I got on Wish's list because I've never bought anything from Wish. But they send me half a dozen emails a day. No idea why I'm on their list.
Hmm.
But I am. Okay, fine.
Speaking of Amazon, there's a new movie premiering tomorrow with Chris Pratt called The Tomorrow War.
Yeah.
A sci-fi...
No, today.
Is it today? It said tomorrow. Well, maybe that was yesterday. Which makes it to tomorrow today, yeah. And so,
considering it's a time travel war, that's funny conversation.
Good, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So and Amazon Prime Video as a way to see new first run movies, and some studios are doing that instead of going to movie theaters. But you said you went to a physical theater. My wife just went to a physical theater for the first time in a year.
It was danged exciting.
Yeah.
We went to see The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a funny movie. It's an exciting movie. But the fact that I was out at a real movie theater made it like 60 times better than it probably was.
It was real people.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And I keep saying I like to go to movies, on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, when nobody's there.
Nobody's there. It's cheaper.
Yep.
But the key question is, did you remember to put pants on?
Oh, I must have. Nobody complained.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess I did. Yeah. No, my daughter took me for Father's Day. She would have mentioned it.
You were wearing your dress from that other play.
Exactly. That's okay.
Yeah. Great gams.
No shame. I have great gams. A lot of people got comfortable with Amazon Video and Netflix and HBO Max and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and have rearranged their viewing habits and are changing their viewing likes because of those things.
Yeah. But movie theaters are not too...
Well, and what's interesting is the movie experience, going with friends and that giant screen, it's getting to be at home now. You know, the small TV you have is the 55-inch one.
You're right.
And you can have a watch party online, so everyone is watching the same streaming movie at the same time, and, mm-hmm. and you're on your phone, you're doing your chatting and talking to each other. So it's getting to be to the point where the big screen theaters isn't as big a deal as it was, and we're used to being at home.
And paying the outrageous prices. You know, and the other feature is, wait a minute, I can pause it, stop it for a minute,
right.
You know, and go refresh the snacks, take a potty break or whatever, and then come back and start it again.
Well, and a friend of mine was talking about Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
How you can either go see it in a movie theater or pay $30 and see it on Disney Plus. Well, if you've got, four kids, three kids, and you and your wife want to see it, there's five or six people.
Yeah.
It's worth $30 because the snacks are a lot cheaper and you can then watch it forever. Watch it every day if you want to after that. But, if you're a single individual or there's just two of you, you're creeping up on it's cheaper to go to the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to see a lot of those hybrid things come along. But I'm still an old movie fan and there's a lot of things I still can't get. Although HBO Max has the Criterion Collection, which is amazing. And so that's great.
Well, like Steve was saying, though, the price of TVs, you go in there now, like say Walmart, one of these other stores, and 75-inch TVs and big, or even 60-inch, $500-$600. It's like, really? 4K?
Yeah.
Hello? And throw it down, whether it's in the basement or another room where you can sit there and, like Steve said, you have a group of folks over and have a watch party.
Yep. And for me, I watch a lot of TV in the computer room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a 70-inch television. I've got a 24 on a monitor arm. I can put it wherever I want it, and it's fine. And I don't mind watching movies on it because it's the right distance for me with my glasses and everything. And
I've got a 24-inch. And I've got it hooked up to my Sling because I ran a cable up there for my internet service. So, I just have Sling on that TV as one tab because there's the app for Sling. I just put it up there and I just click on that tab and I can go through any of the stuff that's on there or stuff that I've pre-recorded and watch it.
Right.
And Sling offers you, what is it? I think it's up to 50 hours right now of free recording. So if you see something that you want to because my wife likes to record, say, various news sections, and she'll watch it the next day because she doesn't want to stay up late. And, if you want more storage, they give it to you, at a reasonable price.
Right. Right. Well, I have a Chromecast? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Chromecast, and I can get everything except Apple TV. And really, up until maybe Foundation, it hasn't been anything I cared about.
I'm waiting for Foundation because I want to go back and watch For All Mankind again. I watched the first few episodes when it was free. Alternate history where Russia makes it to the moon first. So, you know, very much like Philip K. Dick and
right. The Man in the High Castle.
Man in the High Castle, yeah. Second season, they're, you know, developing their space bases, and it's the arms race. So who's going to build the biggest weapon on the moon first? But now, you know, with Foundation, yeah, maybe that will convince you. It's only $5 a month, but there's so many other services we're already subscribing to.
Everything's $5 a month.
Cancel one and start the next one.
Right.
And
right.
then when you get a bunch of them, then you can binge it. I haven't gotten around to Loki yet because I'm trying to finish all the other things I've been watching.
All right. So here's my problem. I just finished binge watching Leverage. Then I started Hustle, which, by the way, is wonderful. It's another heist crew series.
Yeah.
And I had trouble with the first couple episodes because it's not Leverage.
Okay.
But it's still, you know, once I warmed up to the fact that it wasn't Leverage, it's wonderful. Now Leverage Redemption is coming out. So and I'm still watching Loki. There's
8 seasons of Hustle?
8 seasons. Well, the British season, so 6, oh, okay. 8, 12 episodes at a time.
Where's add to watch list? There it is.
Yeah. I love it. Jamie Murray is in it. She was Warehouse 13, H.G. Wells in Warehouse 13. Mark Warren is in it. I think he's wonderful. Robert Vaughn is in it, the man from Uncle. So now I can watch Ilya Kuryakin on NCIS and Robert Vaughn and Napoleon Solo on Hustle. It's a wonderful series, and I'm very much enjoying it. But again, you know, that adds, you know, those are most of an hour each.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you find time for all this stuff and still get everything else done?
Yeah, really.
I thought you were retired.
I thought I was too.
And another guy this week said, I've never been busier once I retired.
Exactly right.
Well, he's retired from that job, not the other ones.
See the list of stuff I had for my wife for 3D printing the other day. Yes, honey.
Okay. Yeah. Have you gotten to any of your own projects?
No. I promised him a set of letters like 2 years ago. I can't get to them. I'm sorry. I am sorry.
No. I figured you're busy.
It's ridiculous.
It's not like something, I got to have. I can't go on the air without it.
Well, see, that's just it. You can wait.
Yeah.
Other people, let's just say, in case she closed early and she's listening.
And you want to sleep with both eyes? Wait.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. Every time I get something set up, you know what? Okay, hold on. Let me just take this off and do what you want. What do you need? And 99% of what she needs is purpose built, right? So she designs it, and then I have to actually build it in the builder software.
Builder thing?
And then, you know, send it over to print, and then nothing she wants is an hour long print. Nothing.
I was watching that Tim Allen reality maker show. Whatever that was. It was kind of cute. They send weird constraints and a box full of parts to people, and you have to build something. One of the guys, they were remarking on how high tech his lab was. His own workshop looked more like a lab. He had a giant laser cutter. He had, you know, all the techie tools. He had a rack of 3D printers.
Oh yeah,
and they were all printing something.
Oh yeah,
so he needed to make a part to do something he wanted, and he just threw it into the 3D printer and made the part. Meanwhile, the guy he's up against, you know, goes out into his backyard and he's got piles of scrap steel. And, all right, I need this piece. And he gets a hammer and starts banging on it.
Well, Tim Allen is, like I say, quite an accomplished ham operator, too, that he's built a lot of circuitry.
Right.
I mean, you know, a lot of folks say, oh, yeah. No, he's actually sat there and built stuff back up that it's fried. And he goes, no big deal. He's taken the radio apart, put new finals in it and everything else. Hey, boom, back had it up. Back up and running.
Yep. I was discussing with a friend of mine 3D printing, and he asked me if I had any plans for printing 3D guns. I said, A, I'm not going to tell you. B, I'm not going to tell you. C, I'm not going to tell you. And that led me to thinking about the fact that it is perfectly legal to build your own gun. There is no law against it.
Mm-hmm. And when you had trying to make a law against it.
Right, right. But when it was strictly metalwork, so few people had the skill to do it that nobody bothered with it. But if you wanted to build your own gun, you could absolutely build your own gun. That's an American freedom.
Yeah.
But now that it's so easy, you know, you buy a barrel, you buy maybe a bit of receiver, you buy inserts for if you're making a revolver, and the rest of it's all 3D printed. It's so easy now, and anybody can buy $150 worth of 3D printer and these free things, and boom, you can make it. Now they're all worried.
Well, and part of the problem is that it isn't people with any skill that pushes the button, right. and so they're either hastily built or they're not built very well, and they're a horrible danger to the operator. Well,
yeah, to themselves. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen, you know, if you build a .22. Then the likelihood that you'll really hurt yourself is small.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't want to take a chance.
I wouldn't, no, but...
I had a 144 and was scared of it.
Yeah. But, you know, you get up into even the 380s or the 38s, and then, you know, there was one guy who was creating a 40 caliber and another guy creating a 45, and I thought, I don't even want to be in the same room with you when you're
the most powerful handgun in history.
Yeah, right. Blows anymore. Up right here while you're holding it.
The first time I shot a 50 cal
revolver,
I said words that I cannot repeat on the air.
Yeah. Have to hit the dump button.
Yeah.
Boop. Boop.
But yeah, so there's 3D printers can do some really amazing things, but then there are things they simply can't do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife asked me for a couple of things, and I said, wouldn't it be easier to just do this with a piece of foam core? Oh, yeah, it would. Yeah, it would.
Yeah, well, sometimes it gets...
The things people do with foam core is amazing, too.
Oh, yeah, believe me. Believe me.
You know, like you say, you got to ask yourself sometimes, or even to do something, it's sometimes cheaper to do it, just go out and get it.
Right.
Than
right.
to spend the time and effort and building it and that, and you could go down the store and purchase it, and you know it's just as good, if not better.
Right. Again, when it's your hobby,
yeah,
knock yourself out.
Yeah.
But if you just need this thing for something else, it's often cheaper and faster to just go buy it.
Yeah.
But like I said, the stuff my wife needs doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. No, she.
So. Yeah, it's mostly bespoke stuff for the coffee stand where she is right now. Hopefully close to closing up.
Yeah, it's almost time.
Yep, but we'll see. She'll have more stuff for me to do this week.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I thought about on Saturday? What, honey? I could use this to do that. Okay, not a problem. You sketch it out. The problem is she tells me on Thursday and wants to take it to market on Saturday.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to work. All right, that music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. We were a little light on the calls this week, but I suspect that's because it is the 4th of July weekend. Happy birthday, America. I hope you go out there and celebrate with love for this country in your heart. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member support. Oh, member supported Jazz 90.1. Let me point out that we've made our goal for the year, for this last fiscal year. We're starting a new one now. So we're essentially with no money, but we made last year's goal, and that's on you. And thank you all so much. We will see you in just 166 hours. No lounge tomorrow night, no lounge Wednesday night, but we will see you next Saturday in just 166 hours.